Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and I'm going to be talking about the book called The Way to Live, Die Art zu Leben in the German. And there's a creational natural law called striving. And we're going to cover some of the passages in this book that talk about striving and then move on to some other things as well that were very interesting to me today. To work means to build one's house with great affection, in which one can live in comfort and strive further for that which is higher, and in which one can execute further work in higher forms. Also, all animals and plants do their work naturally, always in their wise, all life, and all evolution is built upon work, and all work is life made visible, love and joy made visible. Again, work is striving. Striving is a creational natural law that deals not only with doing your day-to-day work, but also with the evolution of your consciousness, and that's our point for being here. So striving is also related to happiness, because the more you strive, the more content and peaceful and happy you'll be. And the flip side of that is idleness. And when you become idle, you'll be unhappy. So one of the keys to happiness is striving and staying focused and working. A human being who cannot work with love and joy because he or she creates an adverse attitude towards it in himself or herself is unworthy in relation to life and all progress. It is better for him/her to separate him/herself from society, because these parasites are burdensome and evolution impending. Work fulfills the life, while idleness only creates uncalm, unpeace, and devolution. This is the same as a human being making the ears of his or her fellow human beings deaf when she brings them lies and deceit, or when he or slash she sings a grating song because he or she is not capable of harmonious singing. Idleness allows the truth and the knowledge to go unheard, and idleness conceals the sense of life from the human being. So again, we're talking about a creational natural law, and creational natural laws are the laws of nature, the laws of the universe. They are created by the universal consciousness, the universal awareness, the universal intelligence. It's an impersonal spiritual being, which is not a heavenly father. It's not a bearded man up there in the heavens that's giving you orders, but it's neither good nor evil. In fact, the universal consciousness in the German is referred to as a Wesenheiten. And a Wesenheiten is really an entity which really doesn't so much have a personality. For example, other Wesenheitens talked about in the German are gases and water and things like that. So the universal consciousness is neither good nor evil. It is neutral positive. It thinks in a neutral positive way. And it doesn't even think in the sense that human beings think. It's a different perspective on, you know, this old haggard term that religion uses called God, which has caused much misconceptions in the world. And the Meyer material doesn't use that particular term, because it's in some ways a misunderstanding. And because we are really personally responsible for our lives and for what we do and what we think, And the universal consciousness of our universe is neither good nor evil. It radiates love like the sun radiates light and heat. In fact, the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation of the universal consciousness. But it's concerned with evolution, and it created human spirit forms. It created this everything in this universe for the sake of evolution. And it doesn't cast people into hell or take people to heaven. The Meyer information explains that your spirit form reincarnates over many, many lifetimes, and you gain wisdom in each lifetime, and you climb up this evolutionary ladder by doing so. And the humanity here on the earth is kind of stuck in stage two, and we're not living our lives according to these creational natural laws, and that's what we're studying this afternoon, is the creational natural law of striving. And striving is critical to your evolution. Without striving, there is no evolution, and there is no happiness. All creatures in the universe have to strive, and every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love, and fulfills its purpose, meaning it lives according to these creational natural laws. Only man can turn away. But let's read a little section here that talks about life and how life is supposed to progress, because life isn't really progressing the way it should here on the earth. It says here, when the human being thinks and acts rightly and is rightly brought up and also rightly orders his or her self-education, then there are seven quite definite values. At the age of 10 years, the human being's sense is turned to learning. At the age of 20 years, the human being embraces the power of his or her ability. At the age of 30 years, the human being is firm in his or her thinking and actions. At the age of 40 years, the human being has left his or her doubts regarding the truth and the knowledge behind him or her. At the age of 50 years, the human being knows the life necessary creational natural laws and recommendations and follows them. Well, that's quite ironic. It's taken me that long to find these creational natural laws and start to understand what they are. At the age of 60 years, the human being has comprehensively opened his or her consciousness for the truth. And at the age of 70 years, the human being can accede to his or her wishes without ever overstepping the limits of that which is right and decent. You know, Billy Meyer is a man in his late 60s. He lives in a tiny mountain village in Switzerland called Hinterschmidruti. There's a building there. It's called the Semyase Silver Star Center. It is the headquarters of the group called FIGU, FIGU. It's a free community of interest that helps Billy organize his writings and translate his writings. And one of these writings is a book called The Way to Live. And like most of his books, it has one page in German and one page in English. And it's a shame that we don't all speak German, because there's something called the evolution code that works in your subconscious as you read this material. Well, and that causes evolution. And I think even in the English, this information affects your conscious, your subconscious, and your unconscious. So particularly this book seems to affect things that I'm not even completely conscious of. It kind of, this information sinks in and moves deep into the consciousness and kind of moves things around. It's hard to quite put into words. Let me talk a little bit about patience here. Patience is an important virtue which the human being must learn and which arises out of wisdom. For which reason it means that truthful patience is reserved only for the great wise ones. The human being must learn to be kind in wisdom, because the difference between popular kindness and low intelligence is only very slight, meaning that there's a popular kind of kindness But we're talking about a patience that comes from wisdom. I think Semyase said love and wisdom go together, and that the creation and its laws are love and wisdom at the same time. And wisdom is a kind of knowledge that produces energy, and we produce the energy associated with wisdom. We help the whole creation to evolve. If a human being's knowledge acquired over time is good and dear to him or her, then he or she always endeavors to constantly acquire new knowledge so that he or she can be a teacher to him / herself or others. That's part of the evolution of consciousness, is striving for more knowledge. And that's part of what we're supposed to be doing every day, is focusing on learning. Because the reason our spirit form came into existence was after ever millions and millions and millions of lifetimes, we evolve to the pure spiritual form again, and then we merge back with the creation. And so the gathering of wisdom is the whole purpose of life. When the human being learns without thinking, then the expended time and effort are senselessly wasted. Because on the one hand, thoughtless learning is not possible. And on the other hand, thinking without learning is dangerous and de-evolutive. So if you're thinking and you're not learning from your thoughts, then you're probably thinking very, very negative thoughts. And that kind of thinking will cause you to literally devolve. It's possible to no longer evolve, but to devolve. And I think that's what's happened here on the earth, that we've had higher societies in the ancient past. And unfortunately, de-evolution has occurred on the earth before. These societies have destroyed themselves and gone back to the Stone Age and had to rebuild. And we've studied in the Maya material about Atlantis and Lemuria, civilization of Pelagon, and also another civilization which existed in the southwest during the United States and created through nuclear war Fire Valley and Death Valley. And that occurred in very ancient times, about a million or so years ago. When the human being takes up and internalizes odd and unreal things and teachings, then he or she tosses the truth far from himself / herself and falls prey to a belief in unprovable and non-existent things. But that is not only dangerous, rather also harmful for all spiritual and consciousness-based progress, as well as for knowledge-based and wisdom-based progress. The Meyer information really emphasizes the danger of religions. And we've had a lot of religions that have heavily influenced the people of the earth. And there's some good things about religion. I recently interviewed a lawyer named Stephen Pidgeon, who is somewhat of a scholar of ancient languages. And he's a very intensely Christian person, but he is aware that the letter J wasn't invented until 1550, and he knew quite well that the apostles, for example, the Apostle John, he gave me the Apostle John's real name, which sounded nothing like John. The same with the Apostle James. And we both agreed that Iesus, as it's called in the Latin, eventually evolved into Jesus, but that the quote-unquote Savior was never named Jesus. His main disciple was never named John, and there was no James. So there was no letter J in the ancient world. This is one of the things that the letter J was invented in 1550 by a guy named Gian Giorgio Torricino, who was an Italian scholar who first created the letter J in the German language, and then it moved to the French and to the English. And some of the original Bibles that first came out, the Gutenberg Bible, the very first King James, none of the apostles are named as they are now. The name Iesus appeared in the name of Jesus. Book of Job was the book of I-O-B. So they went back at some point and they substituted the letter J for the letter I where it appeared. So now we got the book of Job. We've got the Apostle John and James now. These were not the original names of these people. But hopefully, as time goes on, more and more people will learn about these things. We should be thinking profoundly and searching for the truth and not being under the hypnosis of religion or the mass media. And the electronic media today is very dangerous. You should try to minimize your time in front of electronic media, particularly not reading online. It literally destroys your brain. That's covered in the later contact notes, right around contact 1540-something. Another thing to avoid is submissiveness. Submissiveness destroys every feeling of self-worth, causes the human being to live in bondage. And another thing to keep in mind is that people change, and the people that are bad today will be good tomorrow, and nothing stays the same here on the earth. And that's one thing that we have to kind of keep in mind. Let me read this here. Not only do the good have an entitlement to be supported, rather also the bad do. Good and bad alike are students in the block of evolution. Also, the good were once bad. Consequently, those who are currently bad will be good tomorrow. So things are continually changing as time goes on. And let me continue here. That he or she practices and uses honesty. That he or she nurtures true benevolence. And this is part of your duty to yourself. And this is one of the emphases on this section in the arts we live and the way to live, is that we have a duty to ourselves. And this duty to ourselves involves us taking care of our bodies. It involves us taking care of our psyche, our minds. It involves us never letting ourselves appear in a haggard state. We also have to try our best to be honest and benevolent towards others. We never want to do anything that we couldn't be open about and that we wouldn't be willing to tell other people about. Fulfilling your duty to yourself also involves maintaining your self-worth. And these are all very important concepts, and we continue here. That he or she practices and uses honesty, or that he or she nurtures true benevolence, modesty, and humanity in him or herself towards all life and so forth. In fact, the duties to oneself apply to the human beings as the first and most important. And when many do not recognize this or do not even intuit it, unfortunately, many human beings simply live for the day without ever having thoughts about their duty to themselves. And we have a duty to ourselves here. And this is an interesting principle that really I missed the first time through this book. With fulfillment of one's duty to oneself and one's own duty, nothing is addressed other than one's dealing with yourself. But exactly this dealing with oneself is of the most important significance in the human life, because this also determines how the human being behaves towards his or her fellow human beings. So it's very important that we learn this principle of duty to ourselves. And we must understand that the fulfillment of duties to himself / herself is constantly and always the most important and foremost, that we learn to fulfill this duty to ourselves. An example again of this duty to ourselves is that we must, and this is, you know, something I am not successful enough at, as I'd like to be. Here's this: do not become loud when he or she must raise his voice in order to be able to create order and so forth. Well, there are times when you, I guess this is saying you have to at times in order to create order to be loud. But there's probably times when we shouldn't be. Also, this is part of the fulfillment of one's own duty to self. It is never excusable for a human being to neglect his or her own duties and duties to self. And it's interesting, he goes on and talks about some of the distractions that we have in our world today. You know, discos, bars, hotels, amusement parlors, people that are kind of running away from this creational natural law of striving, and you get involved with crowds of people that are idle. And that's another big problem, you know. When people are idle, they tend to pass their idleness on to others, and they also can lose their self-esteem. So we must fulfill our duty to ourselves, which is probably related again to the law of striving again. Let me read this. Precisely that happens when he or she who constantly lives only in distraction, hangs around in discos, bars, hotels, and amusement parlors, he or she becomes a stranger to him or herself, foreign in his or her reflecting and striving, foreign of his or her consciousness, and foreign in all of his or her thinking and feelings. Quite inevitably, such a human being must attempt to throttle his or her deadly inner boredom in the pushing crowd of idle people, whereby he or she loses all self-esteem and the trust in him or herself. These are very profound concepts. You know, again, who is this guy named Billy Meyer, Edward Albert Meyer? Well, he's in his late 70s. He lives in Switzerland. He's written 40 books, kind of like the book that I'm talking about this evening. His spirit form is very, very ancient, and that's why these extraterrestrial humans had contact with him when he was young, because they knew about what would happen in his later life, that he would write books like this, and that people would eventually start to pay attention to this information. Billy's first contacts were with an extraterrestrial human named Svoth. Now, Svoth was a Pleiaren. He lived on a world some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades. Our Pleiades are over 400 light years away. They don't have any life, no planets in the Pleiades that support life. These extraterrestrials were never really Pleiadians, although they allow themselves to be called the Pleiadians, so that in later times people would be able to easily distinguish what was real and what was unreal. And the people that talk about the Pleiaren now are the people you probably need to be listening to, and avoid people that talk about the Pleiadians. But the world that Svoth was from was very similar to the Earth. A little higher gravity. Now, the people there, though, are about at least 50,000 years ahead of us in terms of their spiritual evolution. They haven't had war for 50,000 years. And they are at the fifth stage of evolution now. That's called life and creational wisdom. Their next step, maybe not for all the people in their society, but for many people in their society, will be the sixth stage, and that's the stage of evolution where humanity literally starts to lose the need for the physical body. And at that point, we're kind of half spiritual, half physical. Right now, the Pleiaren themselves get advice from people that are at that evolutionary level. And those people are said to be in the Andromeda Galaxy, and sometimes are referred to as the High Council. So there are these evolutionary steps that societies go to. You see, all of nature works according to laws, and these laws are universal. And some of the laws that we're studying tonight, for example, the creational natural law of striving. And as probably as a part of that law of striving, there's also this idea of fulfilling the duty to yourself, which covers a broad topic. But creation has these repeating patterns, like the branching structure that I talk about, and the circulatory system of the human body. Of all mammals have a branching structure in their circulatory system. And there's a branching structure in trees and in bushes, a branching structure when the lightning comes down. You see, you're seeing these repeating patterns. And that's why all worlds that evolve higher life go through the same cycle, where they first produce plants, and then secondly produce animals, and then thirdly, if the circumstances are right, well, if the circumstances are right for life to begin with, then the third stage will be when human beings start to appear. So there are human beings on other worlds, human beings like us, human beings that are behind us in evolution. I think many are, in some ways, more advanced than us. But the creation has these patterns, like the spiraling seashell, the spirals of the arms of the galaxy, the spiraling of our DNA. If you look at, you know, you'll see spirals in water. Spirals form when rivers flow. There are these repeating patterns because nature is following the same plan, the same laws. And that's what the Meyer material is trying to say, that there are these laws that if we learn them, our life goes much better. And one of these laws is the law of striving. Now, in relationship to the law of striving is the law of duty to yourself. And let me continue to read here. Thus, he or she disregards his or her conscience and prefers to run away to where the inner and the well-meaning voice of his or her consciousness is shouted down by the roar and the tumult of those seeking enjoyment and so forth. There's a tremendous amount of distraction in today's society. Therefore, never neglect yourself and esteem your own friendship to yourself. You know, you have to maintain your friendship with yourself. Now, it's an interesting concept here, is we have to be our own friends. That means you shouldn't be thinking these thoughts that, you know, make you feel bad about yourself. These are not good. These don't think of yourself as your own friend. Be caring, open, and honest toward your inner friend. The Meyer material refers about the inner friend to yourself and to your own capital I. Your capital I relates to your spiritual consciousness. So let me talk a little bit about that. We have a material consciousness and a spiritual consciousness. The spiritual consciousness is that which is related to our spirit form. Now, deep within the middle of your brain is this little spark of energy, let's call it, called the spirit form, the Geist form in the German. And that's the part of you that survives between lifetimes. And the purpose of this lifetime is to bring wisdom and knowledge and strength and energy to the spirit form. And you do that when your material consciousness evolves. So you have a material consciousness, which is your subconscious, your conscious mind, your unconscious mind. And that which controls your material consciousness is called the psyche. The psyche controls the thoughts and the feelings and material consciousness. On the other hand, you have something called the Gemut, which controls the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. So we have the capital I, which I relate more as your innermost thoughts, your innermost feelings, and your innermost concerns. And this is where you evaluate what the truth is. Therefore, never neglect yourself and esteem your own friendship to yourself. Be caring, open, and honest towards your inner friend, to yourself, and to your own eye. Constantly concern yourself with never turning your back on yourself, and thus neither on your inner friend, who you certainly always need. Didn't know you had a friend, even if you don't have a friend. There you go. So, more words to the wise. Do not abandon yourself. Fight for your own life. You must deal with yourself openly and honestly, carefully, gently, and finally, as you do in the best minutes and times with fellow human beings. Therefore, you must not oppress yourself. You know, we think thoughts that oppress ourselves, and we shouldn't do that. Through self-chastisement and self-abuse. I mean, I've done that before. Never chastise yourself. Do not dwell on failures that you've had in the past. Do not do that. Do not self-disregard or have bitterness, and never have feelings of inferiority either. And by the same token, don't be vulnerable to flattery. Flattery is also a problem. Always care for the health of your body and your psyche. Remember, the health of your consciousness relates to if you're thinking in a neutral, positive way, and that's the law of harmony. The law of harmony says if you think neutral, positive, you will stay harmonious in your own self. And if you do that, the power of your own thoughts are amplified. So that's where you get to the power of your own thoughts. Because if your thoughts are negative, you can destroy yourself. And that's why you shouldn't chastise yourself, because literally then you are destroying yourself. The might of our thoughts, remember, good thoughts lead to good feelings. Good feelings lead to good habits. And good habits lead to good circumstances in your life. So you form the habits for success, and then you stay with them, and you continue to work on these successful habits. But it all starts with good thoughts. So you need to nurture neutral, positive thoughts. Those are ones that are good thoughts, but they aren't ridiculous. They aren't overemphasized. So you think in a neutral, positive way. Think of and you can also have something called a wish dream, which will help bring you back to the neutral, positive. The wish dream is the imagination, the idea in your mind. It could be a memory. It could be what you recall of a pleasant circumstance. It could be something simple, like a beautiful, warm, sunny day with the green around, and can be very minor, but it can be something that will pull you back into the neutral positive thoughts. And that's where you get the power in your thinking. Because your thoughts, if they're neutral positive and they're healthy, go out into the universe and they're strengthened, and eventually they'll come back to you in a neutral positive way. So the Meyer information, one thing it does is it teaches us how to think, the way we should think, the healthy way to think, because it all starts with thoughts. And your feelings grow out of your thoughts. Your emotions are spontaneous and they spark up. And they're very difficult. They're hard to control. But if you can control your thoughts and nurture your thoughts and clarify your thoughts, make them clearer, it's a very important thing to do, is repeat. Because repeating isn't just repeating, because what repeating does is it makes things clearer. And when things become clarified, then other truths start to make themselves known. But truth number 2 and 3 will not always appear until truth 1 is crystal clear. So that's why it's important to go over these things. Remember, your consciousness is like a garden. And if you take care of that garden, then you'll have all kinds of growing things in that garden. So it's critical that you do that, because if you don't, something that you don't want is going to grow in there, whether it's weeds in your garden or negative degenerate thoughts in your mind. Let me continue. On the other hand, whoever devotes him or herself to the passions and incessantly sets sail for his or her lusts, vices, and addictions finally runs through the smoldering desert dying of thirst as much as anyone who overstrains his or her consciousness, slowly becoming irrational. So we shouldn't live for these passions because they lead us into a state of addiction and we're constantly in need. Such a thing may happen precisely in that moment when actually the best constellation of new practical experiences and new discoveries would occur for the one concerned. So in other words, if you fall to your addiction, to your desire, it can lead you away from a very important truth that you otherwise could have learned. If the human being does not pay attention to himself or herself and does not fulfill his or her duty to him or herself, then he or she will decline and end in misery, whereby even suicidal thoughts can come about. You see, it's all about your thinking. So if you, and one of these ideas is fulfilling your duty to yourself, which means taking care of yourself, being honest with yourself. Because if you don't, the psyche can be harmed through feelings and thoughts, particularly of an unreal nature. Thus, through imaginations which are called forth through anxiety, suffering, and grief, and so forth. But on the other hand, if you live by the law of striving and continually work to improve things in yourself and continually work to evolve your consciousness, then you'll be happier. And when you learn the law of harmony, which teaches you how you should think in a neutral, positive way, you will be happier. So these are important ways, and these are laws. And eventually, if your good thoughts can lead to good feelings and good habits, and you have the habits for success, then your whole life can be mastered. This is a very important book. It's called The Art of, well, I call it The Art zu Leben, The Way to Live. The Art of Life is what I want to call it. Never allow yourself to appear ragged in your clothing and your self-care, not even when you are hidden, forgotten by the world, and all alone somewhere in the deepest desert, and you cannot be seen by any human being. This is very important. The idea of not losing confidence in yourself, not being addicted to alcohol or drugs. Very wise words from a book called The Way to Live by Edward Albert Meyer. We're going to take a very, very short break and listen to some nature sounds and come back for part two. Okay, welcome back to part two of Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We are talking about the Billy Meyer case. We've been studying the book, The Way to Live, talking about the concept of striving and fulfilling your duty to yourself another interesting article Billy has written. It's called The Source of the Oneness of the Universe. The whole universe is a oneness which flows through all things, all existence, and all life. In this oneness, the human being who has a distinct needs is also integrated. Whereupon the universal oneness also responds when he or she brings his or her words into expression. It responds to positive thoughts and feelings and to the positive word pronounced. So, in other words, you put out the good, neutral, positive thoughts and the universe responds to your neutral, positive thoughts and brings neutral, positive circumstances into your life. Human being of Earth, it is announced to you that you open yourself to the wellspring of the oneness of the universe, which gushes for you and out of which forms a rich stream upon which you set sail your whole life long. Open your thoughts and feelings and climb aboard your ship of life in order to motor along down the stream of life. So there's a oneness to the universe. And the first creational natural law is love. And love goes along with this concept of the oneness of the universe. And in a way, I don't understand yet. We're all, everything is an interrelated web of life. And if you're looking at a tree, you're looking at some aspect of yourself as well. Everything in the entire universe is one. We all came from a Big Bang, and our spirit form is sometimes described as a tiny part of the universal consciousness. So, and one of the laws of creation is the law of reincarnation. At 21 days, the spirit form enters the body of the child, and that's when the heart starts to beat, and that's when it starts to go into the state of being a human being. Before that time, it was on impulse evolution. We're on consciousness evolution. Animals work on instinct-based evolution. But everything is evolving. And that's the whole purpose of our existence, and particularly for the human being, is the evolution of the consciousness. And one of the, you know, I talked about the law of love, and one aspect of that is to live and help live. Not to live and let live, but to live and help live. And we should be living by that law. The Meyer material has some very beautiful passages that talk about this law of love. And in the Fiege material, love is discussed, and it becomes clear that the love that is being discussed is not mushy or grasping. It's not romantic. It's a much more encompassing kind of love. The love concept can be seen as either affective or effective. Affective love is the romantic kind that we're very vulnerable to. We tend to gravitate towards that. The effective kind is very harmonious and very stable. And that's the kind of love we want to focus on. Because the affective love is very transient. It comes and goes. And you've seen it, I'm sure. And it can lead to actually great depths of despair. But effective love, wisdom-conditioned love, the kind of love that recognizes that you are a part of everything and everything is a part of you, the love that starts to understand the oneness of the universe, that's the effective love. That is the effective love that we're told to live by. You know, the Goblet of Truth says that bushes, trees, water, brooks, streams, Everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time which involve many, many lifetimes. And death is just the passage into the world of pure spirit. And many creatures in our universe here are connected. They're connected by psychic vibrations. And right now, we're having the 17-year locust here in the area of Ohio that I'm in. And you can just hear the locusts. They're just so noisy. It sounds like a science fiction movie outside. But they're all aware of each other. They're all working in the purpose of nature. Nature is doing its thing out there right behind my house right now. And the sound of the cacophony is incredible. And this is a natural process. It has nothing to do with mankind. We don't even understand it. But millions of these creatures have come out of the ground, and they're attached to the trees, and they're all aware of each other. It's called the psychic swinging wave in the Meyer material. They're functioning in terms of these creational natural laws. There's a law, a 17-year law in place that brings the cicada back every 17 years around here. That's a creational natural law. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. And love is the highest principle in creation. And it works in absolute logic. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose. Only human beings can turn away from love because we have a free will. And we should come back to re-experience creation's love. There is a sensitivity that's required for that. It's called Empfindung in the German. It's a fine, sensitive feeling. Try to take the time to go in nature. Take the time for your barefoot walk, even if it's just around your house. Be in nature. No life is able to exist without love, without the light of truth. You know, Billy, when he was a very small boy, crawled out a lower window in his bedroom. He's about 4 years old, about in the middle 40s, 1943 or so, something like that, crawled out of a lower window in his bedroom, and looked up at a beautiful starry sky, and he said, "My life is made out of the love of creation." And the infinite love of creation connects all life, because in all life that love lies hidden. And this, at a young, very, very young age, he was fulfilled. He was getting signals. He was getting impulses from the universal storage banks, from the planetary storage banks. And we need to reawaken that sensitivity in ourselves. Otherwise, we're going to continue down this path of overpopulation and destruction. And no light is able to exist without love and truth. And no truth is able to exist without light and love. You know, love is described in the Meyer material as the warmth, the everlasting warmth which comes from the center of creation. It's the highest principle in creation. And here, let me continue to read here. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. The individual should therefore be aware that he only exists through the love of creation, and that he carries this love within himself. Creation created everything in love and logic, and put the same love in all its creatures, so that life itself is love. Life itself is love. And that same love is in the creatures naturally. And we see that love in our four-footed friends, in our dogs and cats. And that's why they appeal to us so much. And life itself is love. And that love is in all these creatures. And this is true, even though life itself seems to consist of conflicts and drudgery. But that principle does not change. And life becomes a tough and heavy battle when we have stepped outside these creational natural laws of love, of striving, and the law of harmony. And remember your responsibility to yourself, to take care of your body and your psyche, to be honest and benevolent. These to never do anything that you wouldn't want others to see. This is part of the fulfilling your duty to yourself. And creation lets its love become apparent through its creation. And I always quote the passage, it says, the incredible, the splendor of nature is a visible expression of the love of creation. And creation radiates love. And at every point, you should be able to sense the radiating love of creation. Each smallest plant, each ever so tiny animal, was created in love by creation. And creation exists according to the same law of love. These are important words to understand. Something that I think I should study in more detail, actually. Well, let's. I'm going to put those notes away right now, and we'll come back to those in the future, I'm sure. Edward Albert Meyer is, again, known to the world today as Billy Meyer. The Meyer information says his spirit form is about 9.6 billion years old. It's older than the Earth, which is astounding. They say that his spirit form has incarnated on the Earth as the people that today we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And that in each one of these lifetimes, he taught this ancient and universal teaching called the teaching of the spirit, the same teaching that I've been talking about this evening. His spirit form, the extraterrestrial, is referred to as Nogodamian. That's that same spirit form. They have the technology to track the spirit form as it reincarnates, and it has reincarnated not only these six other times on the Earth, but it's also reincarnated as two individuals, one named Nicodemus and the other one called Henoch. And it's incarnated on other worlds, in other galaxies, and it has been the teacher of these extraterrestrials before. And even the teaching that comes out of Switzerland now, part of it is for the Pleiarian themselves. I don't know if we have access to that or not. I don't know if it would mean anything to us or not. So it's kind of an interesting thing. We're said to be living in an age called the third millennium, a time of confusion, a time of overpopulation, a kind of confusion and maliciousness is spreading over the world today. And it's because of an ununderstanding of these laws of the universe, the source of the oneness of the universe, the law of harmony, the law of striving, the law of love, the law of the duty of fulfilling the duty to oneself. There's a secret dark order in the world right now that's been quite effective at gaining all the power and the money. They've dumbed the population down using electronic media, cell phones, the internet, television. I always try to remind people not to read things on the internet. That destroys the consciousness quicker than anything. And the Secret Dark Order, sometimes called the New World Order today, is the next step for them is the merging of man with machines, the transhumanist agenda, which further takes away our humanity and it interrupts our natural consciousness evolution and the natural evolution. You see, we're not supposed to evolve into a machine. We're supposed to evolve back into a purely spiritual state. The transhumanist thing is so far from natural. There's nothing good about that. But you see, slowly, slowly, people are addicted to their machines. And that's part of the undermining of the natural course of evolution that's going on. And that's one of the big challenges we face today is fighting against not only our own weaknesses, but the trends of society today are not helping our evolution. And there's a we form out there. There's a subconsciousness, a collective subconsciousness that's working among the people of the earth, and I think it's a good thing. And I think it may help us to get back on the right track of evolution. The most pressing problem here on the earth is overpopulation. Overpopulation destroys the forests. The gigantic forests that we used to have are getting smaller. And the forests, they moderate the weather, and the weather's becoming more and more extreme. It's blamed on everything else in the world. But it's because of our destruction of nature, and it will continue until we start to learn these creational natural laws. Anyway, hope you enjoyed this afternoon's show. The folks that will listen on the internet later and download this, I hope you found some comfort and some wisdom here. We were covering the creational natural laws of striving and the duty to oneself. It all comes from Billy's great book, The Way to Live, The Art zu Leben. Have a good day, and we'll catch you on the next show. Good night.